From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. This is War of the Worlds on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I'm George Eliason, and this is the radio broadcast from TNT, breaking the news of the War of the Worlds. In front of the microphone, you won't be hearing armchair generals and think tankers paid to run propaganda for NATO and the Biden administration. Our microphone is fitted with a special filter to keep the propaganda and false expertise out. This is not the hour for repeating what you've already heard and rehashing what you already know. This isn't the crosstalk of reporters pushing their bylines in exchange for your money. This isn't the BBC's hard talk with its soft-centered confectionery manufactured at the Foreign Office and MI6. They are the alien invaders. This is the hour when you'll be able to hear the news breaking from the news fronts throughout Europe and from your ears to your brains. Not the alien invaders, but the fresh, original human analysis of what the breaking news means. So sit tight, and here goes. Well, today we have a very, very, very intelligent guest. She's brilliant in the work she's doing on how the sun affects climate and weather. Sunspots, magnetism. She's just really brilliant. Professor Valentina Zharkova, PhD, is the director of ZVS Research Enterprise Limited. She's also the Emerita Professor of Mathematics at the Department of Mathematics, Physics, and Electrical Engineering at Northumbria University in Newcastle upon Tyne. Now, Valentina obtained her PhD in astrophysics with a thesis concerning radioactive transfer of solar prominences, conducting research at the main astronomical observatory in Kiev, Ukraine. Valentina is currently one of the foremost solar researchers in Great Britain and the world at large, and discovered sunquakes induced by flaring processes, publishing a paper on the topic in Nature in 1998, which got wide media coverage. She's published more than 200 papers, including her study predicting the modern grand solar minimum between 2020 and 2053. And she's received a SOHO MDO Team Award for discovery of sunquakes in 1999, the RHESSI Award for Outstanding Research 2005, the NSF US Award for Advanced Studies of Solar Flares in 2002. We're going to be discussing the war in Ukraine, whether it was an invasion or liberation. Now, this conversation was done as a pre-recorded show, and it gets a little spicy. I really, really do respect Professor Zharkova's work in her field, and you should too, because it's very, very important. But as we get into this, well, you'll decide yourself. We'll be back in a minute and have a discussion about Ukraine.
TNT Radio's Kate Shimarani.
We've got the Metropolitan Police have got a post. It's on Twitter, and it's saying that if you see something that's inciting terrorist violence, you can contact them with this contact line, you know, where you can stay incognito while you're grassing or whatever you're doing. And so I've written that. I've got a biological vagina, which I have actually. I'm sat on it right now. And that could incite violence if I walked out and there was a rally. In fact, there was a man in a dress in Trafalgar Square saying if you saw a Turk, that apparently is a woman with a biological vagina who's objecting to men in dresses. He was telling people punch her in the face, but he wasn't arrested and charged and thrown in the clink. Isn't that interesting? So yeah, what is now terrorism? What is it all? Everything, the lines are all blurred.
Kate Shimarani on TNT Radio.
This is 5.5 liters of liquid. Now, if you remove a pint, here it is again. Did you notice the difference? Of course not. There's 5.5 litres of blood in the human body. By donating a pint, you'll save up to 3 lives. Give what you can go without to those who can't live without. To start saving lives today, Google your nearest donor centre.
The World Alliance of Independence Thinkers is a 21st century think tank and advocate for civil rights and small and medium-sized enterprises. WAIT was founded upon the realization that our liberal Western way of life and the freedoms that come with it are under serious threat from an enemy from within. Citizens have become subservient to a technocratic form of government that organizes itself under the structures of the United Nations, away from national sovereignty towards stakeholder capitalism. To prevent further loss of fundamental rights, WAIT introduces a unique call to action to strengthen humanity's position under international law and regain a democratic place at the table. For sovereignty, democracy, and the pursuit of meaning, visit WAIT-org.com to find out how you can become a member and help them achieve their goals. A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
You're listening to War of the Worlds with George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back. We're with Professor Valentina Zharkova.
Zharkova.
And we're talking about the historical reality of what actually happened in Ukraine. Now, it was the conversation was lined up. Was Ukraine an invasion or a liberation? Now, myself, I don't agree with either one of those terms, and we'll get into why in a few minutes. Dr. Zharkova, welcome to the show. This is War of the Worlds. And let's talk about how did we get here? What actually happened that brought us to this point where Eastern Europe has a full-blown war going through it, and that might spread.
Yeah.
And it could easily spread worldwide.
Putin,
what's your take on this?
Troops started invasion. They conquered the Crimea. They conquered the east of Ukraine in 2014, and then put the full invasion on the 21st February 2022. So this is pure terrorism from the large country, big neighbor, nothing else. No liberation, this is pure invasion and attempt to kill Ukrainian people, all of them, and to take their lands and their properties and everything and give it to Russians. This is what is going on.
Oh, I've been here in Donbass since 2012. The Russian army didn't show up, and the Ukrainian government, 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017, we're still talking about if Russia invaded. Now, you're a member of the diaspora, and the most famous diaspora member from the U.S. that died here was actually the first American, Mark Poslowski, right before he died. Are you familiar with his name?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't live in Ukraine permanently and only read the news from Facebook.
Okay.
From other news channels.
He was a nephew of Mykola Lebed. OUN third in charge international during when Stepan Bandera was actually the leader of the OUN. Mark Poslowski, in August 2014, was talking about how soon they would win it if the Russians stayed away. Now, this is after the supposed invasion of Donbass, Crimea, etc. The Russians simply weren't here. And in 2014, I was the only journalist that went region-wide looking for Russians. All the passports that I documented and the weapons, by the way, were Ukrainian. They came out of the weapons, out of Ukrainian armories. All the passports were Ukrainian people. Now, there were some Russian advisors here. That's a fact. But even the Ukrainian government is
yeah, I told you that Donbass was populated during the starvation 33 by many Russians, and then during the rule of Yanukovych, It became a center of a party of regions, and they become very pro-Russian. So it doesn't matter, they had Ukrainian passport, they were Russians by the spirit, and they were trying to separate their part of Ukraine from Ukraine coming to Russia. But it turned out, the time shown that with these 9 years, they are not required to Russians. The Russians spit at them. They want to kill all Ukrainians, those who want to Russia, those who don't want to Russia, and just take Ukrainian land. This is what objective of Russian invasion, nothing else.
But the people here have family roots here for hundreds of years. That goes way beyond 1930s.
Yeah, and those who were hundreds of years, they spoke very nicely Ukrainian, and they wore Ukrainian dress.
No, they actually spoke Russian.
Photograph of them only after Russians invaded and put their people into houses of Ukrainians who died from starvation. Only then they started speaking Russian. So don't tell me the history. I know history very well.
And I'm telling you the history of the people here from the people that live here.
Yeah, who came from Russia and pretend they're Ukrainian because they put Ukrainian passports. We know this. Each invasion is done the similar ways. So,
Here's another thing too. Now, what you're saying has no basis in terms of the nationality of the people, because prior to 1920, 1923, when Lenin created Ukraine, everybody
created Ukraine because even Pushkin said. Тиха украинская ночь, прекрасно небо, звезды блещут. It was 19th century. Ukraine existed well before.
That was on the border with the Austrian Empire.
Ukraine has Kiev was founded 1540 years ago. Ukrainian state, Kiev Rus, was powerful Rus. The princesses of Yaroslav the Great. They were the wise, they were princesses. One Anna become queen of France, other become queen of Norway, and of all the countries in Europe, they have Ukrainian blood in them. So Ukrainian state was 1,000 years ago, and
population... That's Krushevsky. This is actually incorrect.
Sorry, which is correct.
The Kiev state came out of Novgorod. Novgorod is where?
Novgorod is far away. It was a remote kingdom. While Kiev Rus was the center in Kiev, and we have a place where the palace was in the center of Kiev. If you've been to Kiev, you would see it.
Kiev Rus were the princes of Novgorod.
Pardon?
They were the princes from Novgorod. That's where they came from.
No, Novgorod was much later formed.
Look at the history. History
I
is something
very
that
history. I studied it at the.
That's what you're telling me.
Don't tell me foreigner to native Ukrainian the history of my country. I know it very well.
I know. You dug the Black Sea with shovels.
It is a lie and it is a nonsense. Russia did not exist. Moscow Kingdom did not exist for 200 or 300 years before, or 500 years before one of the Kiev princes, Yuri Dolgoruki, decided to build something, palace or some fort. In the forest where Moscow was, and this is how Moscow occurred. So just don't tell any of those crap to people because they believe
actually you don't have a good grasp on this history. That's what I'm getting out of the conversation. Up until 100 years ago, literally 100 years ago, all the way over to the Transcarpathians, if you ask the average person what they were, they would say Russian, because that's where it extended. The Ukrainian.
You live in Ukraine.
The border.
Did you live in Ukraine that you're saying this rubbish? Because this is nonsense you're saying. Are you native American or where you come from?
I'm from Boston.
Yeah, so why do you teach in me, native Ukrainian, where Ukrainian come from? Because I know very well where they come from. And I will not accept this crap which you're telling. It is nonsense. I'm sorry.
It's actual history, ma'am.
It is not history. It is history which created in Russian FSB cabinet.
Is Timothy Snyder...
History of Ukraine.
Is Timothy Snyder part of the FSB?
It is nonsense. If I would know that you would be putting pro-Russian narratives, I would not agree to speak and to give interview because I do not accept.
This isn't the Russian narrative. Ukraine.
Russia have to go back to Russia and stop invasion. Stop killing Ukrainians.
This isn't a Russian narrative.
It is Russian narrative. And they must go away from Ukraine.
Let's switch up to the supposed invasion. Now, we had something called the Minsk Agreement, and Russia, Germany, okay, were both guarantors of the peace. But after it was over, after this all started, Merkel came out and said, well, we were just giving
Merkel
the Ukrainians
was
time.
Merkel is a spy from Russia. Merkel is a pro-Russian.
A spy?
Now, forget about Merkel.
That... She was giving Ukraine time to build up an army.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as guarantors,
she was working for Russians. So this is the only thing we know. If
Merkel was working for Russia,
so stop discussing this nonsense. I told you my opinion. I will not accept your point.
Annalena Baerbock
imposed this native Ukrainian complete pro-Russian nonsense. I will not accept it.
Annalena Baerbock working for Russia?
Pardon?
Annalena Baerbock, is she working for Russia?
Yes, she was. She was, a spy or agent or whatever. So
this is Germany's current foreign minister, Annalena Baerbock.
I know who is Merkel is.
Not Merkel. Annalena Baerbock. She's the current German foreign minister. Is she working for Russia?
I don't know. This person, I don't know. I can't say anything. I have no idea.
Okay. Now, in terms of the Minsk peace agreements, okay, that was supposedly there to stop all this. Now, Merkel said she wanted to give Ukraine a chance to build an army. Is that working for Russia? Because that's what Ukraine did.
This is the only thing when Poroshenko managed to establish this Minsk agreement, which was not achievable, but it gave Ukraine 8 years to collect their army and develop their resistance and fight, army could fight against Russia.
If Ukraine did
not have Minsk agreement, Poroshenko wouldn't be able to create all this resistance which we have now, which army fights Russians against the will of the current government.
Now, it was actually the current president Zelensky that actually broke away from the Minsk agreement. And he did it as a response to Russia stopping the transit of gas through Ukraine.
Zelensky now, is a traitor. He should not be coming from Minsk agreement. He should not be using Steinmeier formula. He should not be given south to the Ukraine without any fight.
Well, he's the one that started the actual hot war. By mobilizing, they mobilized close to 200,000 troops on the Gray Line to come over and do what they call the Croatian scenario in Donbas, which is everyone there in Donbas is a foreign invader and needs to be treated like one. And so the Ukrainian army was set to go across the Gray Line and take back Donbas. So men, women, and children were to be treated like foreign soldiers, which is not too good. Russia.
The fantasy you're creating, nothing of this happened. This is the Russian created fantasy in the cabinet of FSB. So don't repeat this.
What are you talking about?
Okay. What now Russians do, they kill people in Bucha. They kill people in Irpin. They kill people in Izum. And we know all this military crime what Russia did to women, to children. They raped little children. They raped women. They killed them straight on the streets.
So did you know that the Ukrainian government debunked
Ukrainian
that story?
Potentially planning to do, and compared what Russia has done already. So
Russia has done, they're criminal.
And they should be in the Hague Tribunal treated.
The Ukrainian ombudsman was fired for telling the story you just told.
Because Zelensky and Yermak working for Russia. This is why they fired. They are criminals. These current rulers, they should be thrown from the Ukraine. This is what I believe. People should remove traitors from the bank.
Are you familiar with Mykola Plavyuk?
No, I'm not.
All right. What do you think of the UPA from World War II? Because they had a lot of veterans around Lviv. They had a lot of veterans. They actually are celebrated now. What do you think of UPA, the Ukrainian resistance army? I mean, what was it they called it? Don't know. Okay, World War II.
No, I know what is UPA. I had no relation to it at all. My father came from Kursk region. He's Russian. He was Russian. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in Ukraine. But I'm very pro-Ukrainian. And we were very Ukrainian. But they forbidden us to speak our Ukrainian language. And my parents, I was speaking Ukrainian. It was Ukrainian until age probably 9, 10. And turn out that my father become worried that I will not be able to succeed in this country. And they moved me from Ukrainian school to Russian to learn Russian, mm-hmm. because they impose Russian in every as a state language in the whole country. So this is what happened. So I don't know what was UPA or something. I grew up much later. I didn't see it. And none of
relatives were part of it. Ukrainian nationalism.
Normal Ukrainian people. But what I remember, this what would happen.
I mean, what you're espousing is a support for the modern version of Ukrainian nationalism. These are the histories that they're telling. This is a narrative that they're saying is in Western media. It's just not the case. I've been here the entire time.
No, it is the case. Russian, they try to kill all Ukrainian. They want to kill everything Ukrainian. They try to substitute Ukrainian history, Ukrainian language, Ukrainian tradition with these bloody Russians, whatever they call. They're drunker. They go to their Russia and live in these decayed houses. Let them go back.
Well, if there's been a Ukrainian state since 1923, when did they do this?
Pardon?
You said they were doing this in the 30s.
Yeah, the Russians, they took all the food from Ukraine and made for years starvation. So people died from the starvation. And if anyone from Ukrainian family go to the field to pick up a little bit of wheat, they send them to Siberia. They killed some family, ate their children eventually to survive. So this is what Russia did to Ukraine. They did
you're talking about the famine of 1932-33, right?
In 1933. You didn't hear about it, didn't you?
So you gave you the years for that.
So many, they killed about 20 million of Ukrainian only, or 14 million of Ukrainian only from starvation. All countries accepted this was a genocide. And now they came with
it. It was black mold, and it was a conversion to tractors.
You came from Boston. Tell me what was happening in Ukraine. Don't tell me this crap. Please, don't tell me.
The same thing happened. The same thing happened in the United States.
Russian
the same thing happened in China.
Russian narratives. Don't dare to tell me Russian narratives.
I'm not telling you a Russian narrative. The same thing happened in America at the same time. It was called the Dust Bowl. The same thing happened in China. Now, none of this, was there a famine in 32-33. Yes, there was. It was caused by black mold.
Well, go away with black mold. It was pure starvation. They took all the wheat, they took all the food from people and left them die without everything. And don't tell me this crap. I will now stop this interview because this is Russian narrative. You are paid by Russia and you don't want
Ukrainian
people to say. You don't know history of Ukraine and you're speaking what Russians put you in your shit. This is not Ms. correct. Sarkova. This is absolutely incorrect. And this is not Ukrainian. And I'm not going to speak Russian agent from Boston. I will not going to speak to you. Okay?
I think that would be wise.
Okay. Goodbye.
Thank you. And goodbye. Okay, that was Valentina Zarkova. And we're going to go to a quick break. We'll be back in a few minutes. This is George Eliason with War of the Worlds on TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Well, it looks like at this most crucial time in our nation's history, for so many reasons, the federal government is once again free to pressure social media companies to stifle conservative voices. That's the result of this week's U.S. Supreme Court ruling, where they agreed to hear a case to determine whether social media companies can collude with the government to censor the speech of Americans. Now, according to the Daily Citizen, the Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit had ruled in September that federal officials from the White House, FBI, CDC violated the U.S. Constitution by coordinating with social media companies to censor content. Posts on COVID, vaccines, and the Hunter Biden laptop were all affected. The court told the feds cut it out, but in agreeing to take the case, the Supreme Court has stayed that order, prompting Justice Samuel Alito to write, "Government censorship of private speech is antithetical to our democratic form of government, and therefore today's decision is highly disturbing." That is an understatement. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg. Be sure to listen to my show Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern Time right here on TNT Radio.
Hey, Dave, how you doing?
Who is this?
I'm your phone.
What?
I am your phone. Don't you listen?
Yes. No, what do you want?
I just want to talk. Oh, I could do this. Ring, 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 ring,
stop it.
Well, pick me up then.
No.
Fine. Ring, 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 ring.
Okay, what?
You are so sprung.
What?
Oh, Dave, $351 and 3 demerit points.
Oh, no.
Don't give in to your phone. You can live without it. A message from the Motor Accident Commission and the Government of South Australia.
You're responsible for an extraordinary number of deaths.
When everyone dies sometime, I just speed up the process.
So how do you choose your victims?
Wrong place, wrong time. Young, old, fat, thin, it's all the same to me. They don't always see it coming.
But the parents who won't see their kids grow up, the grandparents who'll never meet their grandchildren.
It's up to them to take precautions, isn't it?
So you can be stopped?
Yeah. Some fight back.
Exactly how often do you kill?
Well, about every 90 minutes, give or take.
How have we not heard of you?
You have.
Heart disease is New Zealand's biggest killer. Donate today and help the Heart Foundation fight back. Call 0800 830 100 or visit heartfoundation.org.nz or a New Zealand Post shop.
A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
The Light is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's just what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not for right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
This is War of the Worlds on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And welcome back. Yes, that was a very lively conversation. And Ms. Zarkova is very, very convinced of the history she knows. The history that I'm discussing with her, though, is something that Well, one is contentious, yes it is, between a Ukrainian national perspective and an actual historical perspective. The Ukrainians, according to scholars like Perz Rudling, reject the history in favor of a romantic view of things, and which is what they've developed and prevailing winds in Kiev. In schools today in Ukraine, they actually teach that the Ukrainians dug the Black Sea with shovels. That's Ukrainian history today. And unfortunately, this is some of the same sources where Ms. Zakova is getting her information. It comes from the Ministry of Culture, which has been around since before Viktor Yanukovych, and producing these narratives to make Ukrainians develop a national pride, especially after 1991 and the fall of the Soviet Union. So what is the actual history? Now, let's start with a few points that she made. Ukraine is thousands of years old. Well, that follows that narrative. And they, you know, Ukrainians went out of Egypt with Moses is another thing they teach in school. That's not the point. The actual history states otherwise. And it doesn't, and you have to understand this from a realistic point of view. Now, there are all kinds of new nations on the earth. If you look at Macedonia, when Macedonia first popped up in, I believe it was the 1990s, the Greeks got angry because Macedonia had stolen the name Macedonia. But the country is recognized. Israel is a new state. Literally, 1947, it has to be considered a new state. Now, if you look at it that way, in real terms, Ukraine appeared on a map in the 1920s, thanks to Vladimir Lenin. Now, is this knocking the Ukrainians? It is not. Is this saying that the Ukrainians don't have a country and a nationality? No, it is not. Is it saying that they shouldn't feel safe? No, it is not. They deserve the same rights and privileges as every other country. But in terms of the history, believing the tale that comes out of Kiev about the region, you have to ignore the history of every other country surrounding it, which is kind of crazy. Every other country has to throw away their history so Ukrainians can be a few thousand years old. And quite frankly, that's the part I think is just honestly preposterous. According to Timothy Snyder, whose political views I'm very much at odds with, one of the works that he did do, and a lot of it stands up, he made light of what the Ukrainian nationalists did, but he did a very good job documenting how they came about, which was in the Austrian Empire. Now, the Austrian Empire and the Russian Empire were at odds with each other. I mean, two world-class empires left on the earth, and they are next to each other. So while one didn't necessarily want to annihilate the other, they wanted little digs, like people just across the border wanting to go join the other empire was one thing. And each of them wanted to insulate themselves from the other. So that didn't happen either. Well, in the 1912 onward, the Austrians started what they called the Ukrainian Project. Now, what they wanted to do, and this is going into World War I, was insulate their border from Russian influence. The problem was on the eastern border of the Austrian Empire, everybody was Russian, and they wanted the Tsar's Tsarist Russia to take them in. So what did they do? Going into World War I, they started the Ukrainian project. And Ukraine itself, even according to, and I'm sure that Ms. Zarkova would call the Catholic Church Russian tools also, the Catholic Church, if you look in the Catholic Encyclopedia, delineates Ukrainians as a political movement, which is the actual history. It's where it started out. Ukraine literally means the border people. And this isn't degrading Ukraine. You can call yourself whatever you want in life. There was almost another new country called the Polish Ukraine, believe it or not. The German Empire wanted to actually start that and insulate them from Russia because their cousins, the Austrians, didn't. It worked out pretty well for them. It got off its feet, but World War I being what it was, there was, well, that kind of ended things. So we're going into World War I, and what do the Austrians do with these people who want to be a part of Russia? Well, they're going to get a referendum together, and quite frankly, they're going to do a big petition and say, we want out of here, Austria. We're Russian. We want to be a part of Russia. That's how far Russians extended across the world, the Carpathian Mountains, Galicia. This is going into Hungary. What happened? They had a big pogrom, and they told the people that wanted to be, look, you border people want your own country, you know, like we were talking about in the Spring of Nations. Okay, well, get rid of these people. So they rounded them up. And quite frankly, they were done away with as traitors to the state, all the political leaders. Everybody with a political position or had money was rounded up, so there was only poor people left. They replaced the rich people and the political leaders with the Ukrainian leadership out of Carpathia, which is where Ukrainian nationalism has its start. And they sent the Archduke Wilhelm to Carpathia to make all this happen. Now, Wilhelm was going to start two Ukraines, one inside the borders of the Austrian Empire, which would still remain part of Austria, and how much land he could grab over the border in Tsarist Russia. So during World War I, that's what he did. He was part of the Ukrainian siege rifleman. He was a colonel. He was also one of the founders of the OUN, a leader, and he was going to be king of Ukraine. That was the goal. Banderas and all of that in World War II, and you've heard about this, were his people. They were trying to set him up to be king, and they were going to be leaders. Now, there were two trains of thought, and which caused a split in the OUN, and these are the Nazis. And when we're talking Nazis, we're talking the real Nazis that did all the killings, all the Jews during World War II. These are the guys. You had two different groups. You had OUNM Melnik and OUNB Bandera. One of them followed a guy, he was a third leader of an almost realized Ukraine named Simon Petlura. He was OUNM. Bandera's people were under Archduke Wilhelm. Now, when all of this was going on way back in the day, another Ukraine popped up called West Ukraine, and they were going to work together. They agreed, West Ukraine and Petlura's Ukraine, based in Kiev, were going to become one country, which, okay, that is about a quarter of the land Ukraine sits on right now. Well, instead, what Petlura did was give West Ukraine, this Galicia to the Poland. And by doing that, he started the OUNB, the Bandera faction, against him. Well, who did the Bandera faction go to for help? Because they're not big enough to fight a unifying Poland, which is a brand new country, by the way. It didn't exist for a few hundred years. They went to the Soviets, and Wilhelm made a deal with Lenin at the right around the October Revolution. It was right before it. If you support me taking over Russia, starting the Soviet Union, I'll support you and I'll start a Ukraine you can rule over. Well, this was a provision of the Treaty of Brest. Okay, it was a hidden provision. But the Allies did not want Germany making out in any treaty with anyone anymore or have any natural alliances where they could bounce back again, like they did in World War II a few years later. So they nullified this Treaty of Brest. So there was no Ukrainian nationalist country under the Soviets. It was just Soviet Ukraine, and it was Soviet socialism. But the Bandera faction actually fought under the Red Soviet flag against Poland, and they'd come out and do it again in World War II. Yeah, that's right. It was a thing with them. It was a thing with them. And that's why the Pole-Ukrainian friendship is just kind of, you know, on the fence all the time. Because every time they turn around, Ukraine attacks them. Now, so we have a man who's the Archduke of Austria who's going to be king of Ukraine. Now, how many Ukrainians were there in the world at this point? There is an absolute number. And we know this from a few different sources. One of them was a Ukrainian nationalist officer with the Waffen-SS Galicia, who became the founder of the Ukrainian World Congress and their lead historian. That would be a source I'd listen to. His name is Wassel Varia. He was all those things. The first Ukrainian on the planet was Archduke Wilhelm of Austria. Because he was Archduke, he could choose a country where he would get a passport and he would identify with. He created the Ukrainian nationality. It had not been there before. Before this, there were Bukovinians, Carpathians, Bessarabians, but never Ukrainians. Now, he had a political party that was very popular with these people in West Ukraine. And after World War I, all these people moved to Canada. True story. There was a newspaper there called The Echo. And it was in 1922, they were starting to organize them for Wilhelm, going to get them to come back and support his the establishment of his dynasty as a Ukrainian king. Now, what is a Ukrainian? At that point, it's a political movement. So Archduke Wilhelm, the Austrian, had as much claim to being Ukrainian as Stepan Bandera. Bandera, in his lifetime, never stepped foot in any place called Ukraine. Bandera, if he had a passport, would have been Austrian. The first Ukrainian appeared in 1922. an Austrian who wanted to be king. They actually have a monument to him in Lviv, and it's just a pedestal, an empty pedestal, because the people in the know can celebrate him and the work he did, but the people that don't know and don't need to know are the Ukrainians who think that they've been a nationality for thousands of years. Now, in the conversation, I brought up a city called Novgorod. The king of Novgorod, which is in Russia, these were the Vikings that became the Kiev Rus. He sent his sons down, and they were the Kiev Rus. And they split up different settlements. One of them ended up being Galicia, which broke off from the rest of the tribe. Galicia, almost within a few hundred years, would be part of Europe. They wanted no part of being Rus anymore. They wanted to be Western. And the Pope at that time gave a special dispensation to the king of these particular Rus in Galicia and called him the king of Rus, which is where we get all this back and forth with history. We're older, we're this, we're that. No, it's just history flowed this way. Everybody came from somewhere. The Rus were not the actual first settlers in Ukraine. And here's a kicker. You'll get a kick out of this one. The actual earliest settlers. Now we're talking settlers, not national groups that were there. Okay, because you have Sarmatians, you have one of the world's biggest empires ever, but you also have the first group of settlers, which were the Jews. By the time the Kiev Rus got there, which was north of the country, the south of the country was ruled as a Jewish state. And that's the reality of it. So everybody wants to be a Viking, but nobody wants to be one of these Jews that are outside of Israel that have been there for quite a while. I mean, we're looking recorded settlements, 4th century. I mean, you know, why aren't they that? Now, it plays a lot in Ukrainian history, and it plays a lot into the Holocaust, a lot. So when we get into, you know, subjects like that, we really need to be careful with one time frame, two, what are we actually talking about? Now, you know, it's a shame, but if I, you know, brought up, well, okay, most of Ukraine was a Jewish settlement. I think, you know, it's unfortunate, but I think that Ms. Zarkova would have taken exception to that. And the fact that, you know, Zelensky started a war, but she calls him a traitor to Ukraine because he wasn't doing anything. He was honoring the Minsk agreements by breaking the Minsk agreement, you know, to get the war kicked off is just crazy. That he's a traitor to Ukraine, which he is, I'll agree with that point, but for a different reason. He's a traitor to Ukraine in my eyes because he started a war with Russia. And that's not saying, okay, support Russia, support this, support that. It's look what it's done to Ukraine. And he did this for the jingle in his pocket. He did this for Facebook likes. He did this to destroy people in Donbass whose families have been there forever. And the only way this history that she talked about can stand is if you get rid of the people that belong to the actual real history. And this is, it's something that it's actually, it's very scary. Erasing entire peoples so they don't have a history. If you watch the movie The 300, where Cyrus looks at the Spartan king and says, "I will erase you. Nobody who knows your name will live. Nobody that's heard of you. No one will remember you." This is the kind of history that Ukraine needs the world to believe. No version but their version. Romania has to ignore its own history. Hungary, Austria, Germany, Russia. Think about all the different mini countries that are inside Ukraine. There's 18 nationalities there. 18 nationalities, which means, there's no unified Ukraine. No Ukrainian blood, because they're all something else. We have to be very, very careful with history. We do. I was actually hoping that Professor Zarkova would engage in a real conversation about real history, because it's important. And that's not necessarily agreeing with what I have to say about it, but saying this is how I feel about things doesn't cut it in terms of what really happened in history. It doesn't matter how you feel about it or how it makes you feel. It just doesn't. And there's a big danger in going on how things make people feel when you discuss them. So if she wanted to actually cite works, we could do that. But she didn't, and it's unfortunate. Well, maybe next time, we can have a conversation about sunspots. What I'm not going to do is, put this woman, denigrate her. In reality, she's a very, very brilliant woman, very brilliant, in her own wheelhouse. Now, before we end the show, I wanted to bring up the shooting going on in the United States right now, in the state of Maine. 22 people dead. 22 people dead. And this man, for better or worse, is still out at large right now. So what's going on with this? Now, if we look at it, what we have isn't a weapons problem. Now, this is true that Maine, the state of Maine, does not have weapons registration. You can walk into any gun shop or even a Walmart and pick up the rifle that Mr. Card had. What it is a mental health issue, mental health care issue. Now, this man last summer threatened an army base. He said that there were voices in his head telling him to do things. And yet, this was never addressed. This isn't just your average Joe walking around. He was a firearms instructor who'd actually threatened a military base. So, one plus one is always two. Where did they think this was going to go? And now we have 22 people dead and many injured. My heart goes out to the victims. It goes out to the victims. But if you took a vote in Maine, whether to ban weapons or not tomorrow, it would be a resounding no. I lived there for a while, and it was kind of funny because the town literally voted out the police department before I moved there. And what actually happened there, crime dropped down to next to nothing. There was no crime. So it's not gun control. It's not the answer. In this case, it's a better mental health care system. I'm George Eliason. This is TNT Talk Radio. Thank you for joining us today.